Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. There was a story in yesterday's Washington Post headlined, "What Makes Dogs So Special and Successful? Love." And the feeling is mutual. That's why the loss of a dog can be devastating. And later in the program, Gone Dogs, a collection of stories about dogs that have passed on as told by their owners. First, another aspect of the ever-rising cost of healthcare in America, and one that is rarely spoken of, much less considered. The price of a ride in an ambulance. The reason they're considering that cost is because of the reason we're considering that cost is because of the recent announced intention by Mecklenburg County to collect overdue bills for ambulance service. More than 3,000 people owe, collectively, more than $3 million in unpaid ambulance bills here. For many, particularly those who have never used an ambulance, the costs can be expected and or can be unexpected and more than they can afford. And because these aren't joyrides in taxis, but medically necessary emergency transportation, calling for an ambulance doesn't seem like a choice. That subject was raised by Tara Long, a speaker at Tuesday night's county commission meeting.
I'm terrified for the lives that will be lost because people are afraid to call for an ambulance because they can't pay for it. We don't think about money when we call the fire or the police department. Why should we when we're sick?
Similar reaction from others has caused the county to push the pause button on overdue ambulance bill collections, but the cost remains. Mecklenburg County Medic was unable to provide anyone for this discussion, but we have prevailed upon two experts in this area of healthcare costs to share their thoughts. Christopher Garman is Assistant Professor of Health Administration at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. Prior to holding that position, he served as a staff economist at the Federal Trade Commission, leading the economic analysis for various antitrust investigations with a particular expertise in the economic analysis of healthcare provider markets. Christopher Garman joins us by phone. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Lauren Adler is Associate Director of the USC Brookings Schaefer Initiative for Health Policy, whose research focuses on a range of topics in healthcare economics and policy, including insurance markets, prescription drugs, Medicare, and the Affordable Care Act. He joins us via Skype. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And if you'd like to join our conversation, you can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook. Get to us through Twitter at Charlotte Talks as well. Christopher, let me start with you. How unusual is it for people not to know or consider the price of an ambulance ride?
Well, for emergency transport, I think it's really the last thing on your mind. If you have an emergency, you call 911, you expect the nearest ambulance to come get you and provide you transport to an emergency room. I think it's natural and I would hope that people would think of the financial aspects last in a situation like that. So most people don't think about the cost.
And would it be safe to say that most people who have never called an ambulance would be surprised to find that in many communities, perhaps most, this is no longer a free service?
Yeah, the way ambulance services are provided really varies across the country. There are some places where it's provided through the local government, say through a fire department. There are other places where the local hospital provides the ambulance service. Still other places where it's provided by a private, a nonprofit or for-profit company. Mm-hmm. So it really varies.
Since you've both worked in studying the medical cost field for a long time, is this another instance where it seems that American consumers are set up to fail when it comes, and at least set up to go into deep debt when it comes to anything with regarding their health care? Lauren?
Sure. So I think this fits in this context of surprise bills that patients might get that sort of has been a focus of the national conversation and some conversation locally in North Carolina as well, where, right, there are certain areas in healthcare, where everything is expensive in America, but, right, there are certain areas like ambulances where there is a pretty clear market failure, and you can't envision a functioning market for ambulance service, right? The ambulance can, the patient has no idea that it's going to cost anything, so the ambulance can kind of bill the patient whatever amount they can dream up. And on the flip side, the insurer knows that by law the ambulance has to pick the patient up. So we're left with this quandary here for ambulances in particular that lead us to this sort of high and generally rising costs that sort of force government to intervene. And as Chris was saying, there are a lot of local governments that do strongly regulate this, and there are plenty that still offer it for free. But as you're seeing, I think more and more recently, there are a lot of governments who have sort of offloaded this to either a hospital or a private equity company to handle this. And then those patients are getting stuck with, you know, what can be a pretty large bill. I think I looked it up in Charlotte. It's about $1,000 for, you know, a 3-mile ambulance ride in Charlotte. That's what they were charging compared to, you know, Medicare would pay about $400 for that same service. So, you know, these can be pretty sizable bills that the patients are getting stuck holding the bag on.
And there are a lot of some strange rules and regulations or strange procedures, let's put it that way, that a lot of these ambulance services operate under, and we'll talk about that as we go through the show. I know neither of you live here, so you're not terribly familiar with everything that goes on in Mecklenburg County, but we here see three different kinds of ambulances, if I'm not mistaken. I was trying to think about this yesterday, about the ambulance that either have to follow into work or pass me as I'm coming into work, and some of them look like, If my memory is serving me correctly, county-operated vehicles. Others have the branding of a particular hospital on them. But under a contract, I'm told, with the two main hospitals here, Atrium Health and Novant Health, they operate the ambulance service together. Is that similar to other services around the country?
It really varies. A lot of places around the country do have their hospitals, their local hospitals that operate the ambulance service, and then other jurisdictions, the local community operates it through, especially through the fire department or sometimes through a separate agency.
So prior to this arrangement that we're experiencing here, the county provided the service. It was paid for by taxpayers, so a lot of longtime residents, it would seem to me, may be unaware of the change, and they also may regard ambulance service the way they regard calling the police or the fire department, for which they are not charged. So why should transportation to emergency medical care be different, Lauren?
I'd say there's no reason it should be different. I think that's the fundamental reason why I think this approach of we are going to effectively tax just the people who use the service, all right, this bill that was under consideration is saying we are going to sort of, you know, we're going to kind of do the ambulance companies or the hospitals dirty work in this case and collect money from the patients on their behalf for it and give it to the hospital. But that is charging the people who need the service. And when you are talking about an emergency service, whether that is the fire department, the police department, or an ambulance, you don't want people to be considering costs when deciding whether to seek that help. You don't want people to have their house on fire and be weighing, oh, it's going to cost me $2,000. Maybe I should try with a fire extinguisher. Maybe I should get out my hose and try to do this myself. You really don't want that consideration to be entering people's heads during a what can be a life and death decision, which all of these three entities are. And this is why historically this has always been treated as a public utility. Still a lot of localities in this country treat it that way. I get that it is expensive. And that is part of the reason I think local governments have tried to offload this service. But at the end of the day, this is something that typically should be funded by taxpayers. And I mean, especially in a well-off city like Charlotte or Mecklenburg County.
Because hasn't that been the traditional role of government to do things for their citizens, for their taxpayers, that they cannot do for themselves?
And this is an area where in emergency medical transport, you can't have a functioning market, almost by definition.
Right.
People can't shop around when they're in an emergency. I'm going to shop for the lowest cost ambulance service. That's just not the way it works. You call 911 and an ambulance is dispatched to you. So it really isn't something where people can shop. Although in other parts of the country where ambulance services have been privatized, there's some research showing that people will switch to Ubers to get them to the emergency room to avoid that cost of an ambulance.
And we're going to talk about that, too, because that has been a suggestion. I think somebody brought it up at a county commission meeting. What am I supposed to do, take an Uber? We'll talk about that. What led to this privatization of ambulance services? Is it simply that it became a burden on municipalities that provided as part of the tax-supported services that they provide? Or was it something else? Because evidently, Mecklenburg County was losing money at this. Well, they're still losing money because they can't collect, not the county, but the people who are running the ambulance services can't collect from some people who simply can't afford the service. So aren't they still losing money?
I would suspect. This is a very costly service. If you think about it, ambulance services for emergency transport have to be on call 24/7. They have to have highly skilled EMTs and paramedics. They're basically mini trauma units on wheels, so it's a very costly service. So I can see why local municipalities could be losing money providing this.
It is said that because Medicare covers ambulance use, but they cover it at a very low rate. I think, Lauren, you mentioned that the average cost of an ambulance ride in Mecklenburg County is $1,000, for which Medicare pays $400, and then the user of the ambulance doesn't have to pay any more if they're a Medicaid patient or a Medicare patient. But the rest has to be picked up by somebody. Is that one reason for these high costs, or are the high costs due to profiteering?
I'd say more of the latter. I think you see the costs of ambulances in particular don't necessarily bear a clean relationship to the Medicare rates. There are certainly, local governments are effectively putting regulations on how quick the response time of an ambulance has to be, the bells and whistles of an ambulance. So, the locality is somewhat responsible for how costly the service is actually to provide. But the price they're charging, it doesn't actually bear any clean relation to the actual cost of that providing that service. They want to make the most money they can on this. Sometimes they're still, getting a subsidy from the government. When local governments are doing it, they're probably trying more to just kind of offset this. But it is worth noting, right, they are also, they're treating some patients and not getting paid. So, right, when you pick up a very low-income patient who's not on Medicaid, so, higher than that, right, they often might not be able to collect that $1,000 at all for it. So it certainly is a hard sort of business to run. But that's fundamentally why this naturally fits much more cleanly to be paid for through the tax code. I just think, right, it has gotten expensive. It's hard to raise taxes in a city or a county, which I think is why it's become difficult to have this regulated on such a local level, right? The federal government or even the state government has a much easier time raising tax revenue if they were going to kind of pay for this.
I have about a minute left in this segment. Around the country, are ambulance services abused? In other words, are there people who call the ambulance for a hangnail and get transported to the hospital for virtually nothing? They could have taken a cab, they could have driven themselves, they could have hopped a bus. Or are people using these normally for legitimate reasons?
I'd say there's always, you can always find anecdotes of abuse. By and large, that does not seem to be any more than a very rare situation like that. Most people don't love the idea of taking an ambulance. And, if you tried to do it a bunch of times in a row, you would eventually get in trouble.
That's Christopher Garman, who's Assistant Professor of Health Administration at the University of Missouri in Kansas City. He's here along with Lauren Adler, Associate Director of the USC Brookings Schaefer Initiative for Health Policy. Much more to talk about with regard to ambulances and why they cost so much and why the shift to private ambulance services away from taxpayer-funded, municipally-run ambulance services. And we'll continue our conversation in just a moment. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the cost of ambulance service here and around the country and why it is so much and why there has been a paradigm shift and who pays for it and how it gets how these services get reimbursed. I'm told that I misidentified the last person speaking. That's what happens when we have two guests in a remote location that I cannot see. Lauren Adler was, in fact, the last person you heard speaking. He's the Associate Director of USC Brookings Schaefer Initiative for Health Policy, and Christopher Garman is also with us, Assistant Professor of Health Administration at the University of Missouri in Kansas City. Interviews with people here locally who are in arrears in their payments for ambulance service haven't paid in many cases, they say, because they can't. And several asked during a recent county commission meeting, what are we supposed to do in an emergency? Call an Uber? Well, what are they supposed to do, Christopher?
That's increasingly what people are doing in other parts of the country. There's research showing that when Uber has entered into cities, ambulance rides go down. People take the ambulance less often. So in many
is that an indication of abuse or simply people being smart and trying to save themselves money in a non-life-threatening situation?
It may be in a life-threatening situation. The anecdotes I've heard about from some Uber drivers suggest that may be the case. I think it is trying to avoid these hefty bills from ambulances and doing something that that makes more financial sense for them.
I mean, it may sound like a crazy question. What am I supposed to do to call an Uber? But according to Austin Fracht, director of the Partnered Evidence-Based Policy Resource Center at the VA Boston Healthcare System and a professor with the Boston University School of Public Health, the answer is yes. He says that sometimes Uber is the better option. Well, that's certainly true, I guess, in non-emergency situations, but in an emergency, you wouldn't want to take an Uber, and I would think Uber wouldn't want you in their cars. Plus, they can't run red lights.
Yeah, and how is a patient supposed to make that determination? How are you supposed to know whether it rises to the level of an emergency where you need an ambulance or you can get by with an Uber? That's something that people shouldn't be trying to make that call on their own.
So according to Kaiser Health News, one patient was charged $3,660 for a 4-mile ambulance ride to the hospital. Another was charged $8,460 for a trip from one hospital that could not handle their problem to another that could. And another found herself marooned at an out-of-network hospital where she'd been taken by an ambulance without her consent. And I'm sure there are legitimate reasons for the high costs of all of this and why that all happened. But why does it cost so much? Why do things like that happen, Lauren Adler?
Sure. So I think for those really jarring ambulance bills like that for short rides, at that point, I think you were much more looking at profiteering. There's been a big influx, particularly of KKR, a large private equity company, has moved and become a very large player in the ground ambulance market. And if you look at how much they're charging for these sort of the same ride that a hospital or a nonprofit or a county would be charging for, right, they're charging three times as much. A lot of times, so that's where you're getting a $3,000 bill for what might have been $1,000 elsewhere.
I mean, I read a story yesterday about a woman who had a subway platform accident where she slipped off the platform and her leg got caught between the platform and the train, and she had significant damage to her leg, and she pleaded with bystanders who were trying to help her not to call an ambulance because she could not afford the ambulance ride. So just hypothetically, I'm walking down the street. I collapse on the sidewalk. I'm unconscious. A bystander calls 911. They dispatch an ambulance. I'm going to have to pay for that ambulance. But I didn't order the ambulance. Why should I have to pay for it?
Well, about half the time, the ambulance will not be in your health insurance network.
Yes, and so I know. That's another problem.
You could be on the hook for a very substantial bill. In fact, some recent research suggests that it may be closer to 80% of the time you could be on the hook for a very substantial bill. So it's It's really sad.
See, this is another thing about the cost of health care, that it seems to me that Americans are set up for failure. Why would an ambulance be out of anybody's network? Why aren't emergency services in network for everyone who has insurance, Lauren?
Your guess is as good as mine. This is something, I think this is fundamentally wrong for the reasons you lay out here, right? You don't want someone considering the costs when they're going to get an ambulance, or if they're in a true emergency situation, having to call an Uber and, you know, bleeding on their seats, right? This is not, these are not the situations where you want someone considering costs. And as Chris was saying, right, some of the time you really had no choice, or you were saying when you're unconscious, you've signed no contract, you've made no agreement to pay, but you know, you need an ambulance very clearly. That fundamentally is something that we all as taxpayers should be paying for together.
I mean, most people would not know if one ambulance service, first of all, I think most of us look at the ambulance and think it's coming from the same place, and it's not.
Yeah.
And most people would not know ahead of time whether ambulance service A is in network while ambulance service B is out of network. And even if they did know it, they're not going to take the time or have the time, and sometimes they wouldn't have the ability to specify, don't call ambulance A, call ambulance B for me. Somebody's right. going to do it for you, and they're not going to care.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in emergency transport, you have no control. It's whatever ambulance is dispatched to your location.
Lauren Adler has to leave because he has another appointment. So, Lauren, thank you for joining us. He's the Associate Director of USC Brookings Schaefer Initiative for Health Policy. Thank you for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Christopher Garman remains. He's an Assistant Professor of Health Administration at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. Here's how this works. Correct me if I'm wrong. You have an emergency. Somebody calls 911. A dispatcher chooses the ambulance, and therefore the ambulance crew, and sends it to the scene, and the ambulance crew chooses the hospital they're going to take you to. Given the realities of the cost of medical care in the United States, and in-network and out-of-network, the maze that that creates, why do we have this system? It's insane.
Well, I think it makes sense in that, you know, the medical professionals should be making the decisions about where is the place where the patient can get the best care and the quickest possible care to treat the patient in many cases a life-threatening situation. It shouldn't have to do with cost. They're really, you can't have a market where people can shop for a service like this. It's not like an MRI where you can say, oh, my doctor said I need an MRI, I'm going to shop around for the best deal. When you're in an emergency, you go to the nearest place, and in an emergency, an ambulance will take you to the nearest hospital that can treat you for that condition.
And wait, it gets worse, because the ambulance may be in-network, if you have insurance, it may be in-network or out-of-network, and you don't necessarily know, but even right. if it's in-network, they may take you to an out-of-network hospital, and you may not be aware of where they're taking you, because you may not be in a frame of mind or in a physical condition to say, don't take me there, take me here. And as you said, they may have to take you to Hospital B because that's the only place that can treat what's wrong with you right now.
Right.
But then if they take you to an in-network hospital, you may be treated at least temporarily by an out-of-network doctor. This is crazy.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
But that's our healthcare system. And I'm really hopeful there's bipartisan support for a solution to this, at least in terms of the hospital-based surprise medical bills. There are bills before Congress right now. They're being held up, but I'm hopeful that there will be at least a partial solution to this problem.
So I also understand that most ambulance services charge by the expertise of the crew on board the ambulance. Some crews may have the training so they can help with advanced cardiac life support where required. Other crews may be just able to provide first aid for a long enough time to get you to the emergency room. The crews are not matched to the patient's need because they're just dispatched by a dispatcher who doesn't know the situation when the ambulance is dispatched. Why do we do it that way?
You know, I'm not sure about that. I know that there are different gradations of training, everything from basic EMTs to paramedics, and there are regulations about who has to be in an ambulance to for ambulance service. I think most regulations require at least one paramedic and two trained personnel. I'm not sure about that. I think that the dispatcher and the ambulance would try to send the best team to treat the patient, but I really don't know about that.
So I think Lauren Adler mentioned that the price of an ambulance ride in Charlotte, Mecklenburg, is about $1,000. I'm not sure that that's true, or it could be higher or it could be lower. In this region, the average overdue or delinquent bill is $821. What goes to that cost? We're talking about if I need an ambulance right now, right here, we are about 8 blocks away from one of the lead hospitals. So it's an 8-block ride from where we're sitting right now. Why does it cost $1,000 to go 8 blocks?
Well, it's not just that cost of the transport itself. It's also the cost of having those technicians on call at all times, having the training and having the EMTs and paramedics on call at all times, as well as the equipment to have a rolling mini trauma unit. So it's a costly service, and in some places like rural areas, it can be even more costly. And in an urban area where there are more ambulance transports, the cost due to economies of scale can be lower. In some places like rural areas, it can be very costly because the trips are longer and there are fewer of them. So it can be very costly.
What happens to a person who does not have insurance? We've talked about ambulances picking up people and they're not in network for that person. What happens if you don't have insurance?
Well, so one of the benefits of having insurance, and especially if you're lucky enough to have an in-network ambulance come and pick you up, is the insurance company gets a discounted price. If you're uninsured, there's no discounted price. You pay the full list price, or at least you're billed the full list price. And most of the people who are uninsured just can't pay that, and they don't have any ability to, and so they don't. So
can they negotiate it down? Can they
negotiate like that? It could get written off, or it could be sent to a collection agency.
Can they negotiate the price down to the insurance rate?
They could, but I don't know much what leverage they would have in negotiating with an ambulance company at that point. It's not like they can say, oh, I'm going to go somewhere else. They've already taken the ambulance ride. So there's not a whole lot of leverage in that negotiation.
A person can refuse if they have all their wits about them at the time. They can refuse to get into the ambulance. Would that negate any charges? Because the ambulance has been summoned.
So I think it varies. There are situations where if you do not get into an ambulance, you would not be charged. But and certainly they have to be able to know who to bill. I'm not sure that that's the situation everywhere, but there are certainly situations where if you don't get into the ambulance, you will not get charged.
Ambulance services can, and do, I am told, charge for ride-alongs. So if you put grandma in the ambulance because she legitimately needs to go, and you want to ride in the ambulance with her, they can charge you for the ride. Do most people know that? And why would they do that?
No, I don't think most people know that. And this is true of our healthcare system overall. You can be charged for many things that you weren't expecting that may not even seem relevant. It's not just true for ambulances, but whether you go to the emergency room or even an elective procedure, you may be charged for lots of things that you weren't expecting. That's one of the benefits of health insurance, is your health insurance company will negotiate that, and in many cases negotiate a discounted fixed rate, so you won't get all those nitpicky charges. But if you don't have health insurance, or that provider's out of network, you no longer have those protections.
You study this for a living. We've talked about this ad nauseum for the years that the country's been grappling with the rising cost of health care and whether or not we should have Obamacare. This conversation has been going on for 15 years now. Mm-hmm. Why do we do this way? This is the only industry that I can think of where you don't know what something costs before you buy it, where you have to buy something sometimes because you have to have it right now or you will die, and you don't know what it's going to cost, and the ramifications may be disastrous for you in the end. Yep. Why do we do this for healthcare? Why do we do it this way?
Well, I don't think we should. I think for services like emergency transport, emergency trauma care, anything where you have no control, where you cannot shop around for the best deal, we shouldn't do it this way. I think that there should be more regulations put on to control the costs of those services. There are a lot of healthcare services where patients could shop around if they knew what the prices were. That's another big problem. If your doctor says you need an MRI or your doctor says you need a knee replacement, that's something conceivably you should be able to shop around for and find the highest quality, best deal. But often patients don't know what the prices are. When they call the hospitals, they can't give them a price quote. They have a hard time comparing the quality across hospitals. That's something that we really should do something about. It's one of the only industry I can think of where you can't get a price quote for many services beforehand, even for those services that are shoppable, where you should be able to shop around.
So I said in the beginning that this is the cost of ambulance service is something that is usually not discussed when policymakers and politicians are looking at the rising costs of healthcare. If that is true, why is that so?
Oh, that's a great question. I'm not sure. So Congress right now is trying to solve the surprise medical bill problem. When you go to an emergency room and you know the emergency room's in network, but you get treated by an ER doctor that's not in network or an anesthesiologist who's not in network, there are pieces of legislation currently being considered. There's bipartisan support for a solution. I'm hopeful that something will happen there. But even those bills don't include anything about ambulances. I think the only bill that even talks about ambulances just proposes studying the issue more. I think it's simply because they want to solve it one step at a time, you know, solve one problem and then go to the next, because it's too hard to solve all of them at the same time. That's my only guess for why they haven't included ambulances in these legislative proposals.
Christopher Garmon is Assistant Professor of Health Administration at the University of Missouri in Kansas City. Also with us earlier in this conversation, Lauren Adler, Associate Director of the USC Brookings Schaefer Initiative for Health Policy. Thank you for joining us this morning. I appreciate it. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.